Nope, we're done. Schalas amalacha kikinyan. You think I'm joking, but we're going to start flying now. Finish this masechta.
Yeah.
No, I'm probably joking. I'm saying it under duress. Let's talk about schalas amalacha kikinyan.
So we've been talking a lot about this distinction between kind of yielding paradigms, somebody just provides a service, and the idea of doing it under a contract, doing it under an agreement, and talking about what constitutes a meeting of the mind such that it is an agreement. But generally, in halakha, for agreements to be binding, in addition for there to have been some background meeting of the minds,
there also has to be some sort of kinyan, right? That's what's going to make the verbal negotiations
binding, right? And that's what's going to lock the parties in to the terms of their background negotiations, their background agreement. So I want to take just 2 minutes in the beginning of this year to point out that the sugya does seem to assume that in the standard case of Sfiras Bolin, there is a binding agreement such that the parties are locked into those terms, right? I mean, seems pretty straightforward from the sugya. Pisri Choshen in Perek Ches Siman Aleph says, you know, Asocher Sepol Yikva Yimo B'Tchila Scharo V'Tnaya Tashlam. You should work out the terms. V'Chol She Pasak Yimo Scharo V'Asa HaPula Nozin Lo K'fisha Pasku Afal Pishalo Asu Kinyin. You don't really need a Kinyin in order for those terms to be binding. So why is that? And I think what he means is that you don't need a separate Maisa Kinyin to make those terms binding. And I think he's primarily moved by the fact that the sugya itself doesn't speak of a ma'isa kinyan when it talks about hiring Paulin. So most of you seen the sugya in Ayin Zayin. Did everybody see the sugya in Ayin Zayin? Yeah, right? Let me see if anyone else is here yet. No one else is here yet. Sugya in Ayin Zayin. What's going on in the sugya there? Volunteer? Sugya Ayin Zayin, anybody want to tell us? Hey, what's the main, just tell me the upshot outside.
You have this, it seems like there's some, like, a deal that's already happened, so there's a kala of this deal, and then something changes with the price or something. I mean, that's just, I guess, like, the commonalities of all the different cases.
Yeah, either there's a market fluctuation about the price of labor, or there's, like, a grief that workers say, we don't want these terms anymore, right?
Right, something changes, and they leave, and then the other party tries to convince the first party to, like, come work for them.
Right, so I'm working for you, and I say, Ben, I don't like the conditions, really bad, and you say, oh, I'll make things good for you.
Right.
Or whatever, right?
Yeah, that's what it seems like. I guess the notion to, like, grapple with, like, how exactly that.
Yeah, but the main upshot is, they're bound by what?
Well, so you say they're bound by the Haskalah.
They're bound by the original terms. Right? So the... Right, unless...
You mean the original, yeah, because it doesn't change based on this fluctuation of time.
That's right. Which suggests that they're bound by the terms of their initial agreement.
Yeah.
Even if market conditions change, yeah. even if the parties has said about the terms and says I want things different, unless there's like a real new agreement to override the old agreement, they're locked into the terms of the old agreement.
Yeah.
Now, the Rishonim Mir Handel, right? What exactly does it mean to renegotiate those original terms, right? So you saw, for example, the discussion in the Ritva, who says, oh, if the Poel says, I'm not going to continue working unless you give me a better salary, and the Balabayas kind of says, okay, I'll give you a better salary, that's a renegotiation, right? So you're making a new Kenyan that's going to supersede the old one. But absent that, right, and just the party says, I don't like the terms I want, I don't like the terms, and the Balabaya says, like, okay, we'll make things good again. Those kind of vague statements, those don't constitute renegotiation of terms. Right? So they're locked into the original price that was agreed upon. So I think even just the plain meaning of the sugya is assuming that the agreement is binding, even though the sugya never spoke about the performance of a ma'isa kinyan. Right? If there was no ma'isa kinyan at all, you might think if the market price for labor changes and the compensation for the workers' labor should change with them also. Right? If it's, let's say it's just a yored, right? And the price of labor arguably at Monday was $4 an hour, and then the guy also worked on Tuesday when it's $5 an hour, he's going to get an average of 4.5 because he'll get, right? His compensation fluctuates with the market. That's if there's no Kenyan. If, however, there's a Kenyan, then you would say, no, the terms of the agreement govern the entire relationship. So I just want to point out the Gemara here seems to be assuming that there is that kind of contractual relationship that's binding, that sets the terms for the rest of it, and it's only if there's an explicit new contract, only then can you override those terms.
Can just for the course of the hour, we would assume, articulate some kind of distinction between the kind of Kenyan that doesn't exist by Sirius Polim and what we're calling the Kenyan,
Good. We can't have a linguistic distinction until we know whether Haskalas Malacha is the same as other Kenyanim.
Okay.
Right? So we could just say standard Kenyanim versus the Haskalas Malacha. That's the phrase that I'll use. Right? So when I say standard Kenyanim, it means non-Haskalas Malacha Kenyanim. Okay? But good point. Yoni.
How do you know that wasn't Kenyanim? Standard Kenyanim?
Yeah, because the Gemara never says it. Right,
the Gemara's not talking about
it's possible.
It's not talking about the price negotiations at the beginning either. It's not.
Okay. So you're saying maybe just a background assumption of the sugya is that there was a Maisa Kenyan?
Maybe they had just a Mashifa or...
Yeah, it's an interesting theory.
There's no mention of it here.
It's an interesting theory. I guess I'll point you to this Ritva then, just as an example. Right, the Ritva's trying to figure out what distinguishes a pius from a renegotiation of a contract, right, or a new contract, right? So the worker is upset in the middle. If the Baal Bayis just says, I'll make things good for you, that's not a renegotiation, but if there's an explicit tzitzas hadamim, and the worker says, I'm not going to work unless you give me this amount, and he kind of says, okay, that is a new agreement. Never is there any talk about a Maisa Kenyan on it. He's relying on that Tosefta and Kiddushin, which we saw earlier. Right, so remember the Gemara says that the Baal Abayis says stick around. He could always claim that he didn't have in mind to give a better salary. He had in mind to give some extra bagels during the work period, right?
Yeah.
Pir Sharbeinu, the Ritva says the Davka Dmei Kara Imru Stam VaAmru Lo Nasa Imcha B'Tanai Shepasakta Imanu VeIyu Paisinu Stama. This is only true if the workers didn't have an explicit condition for their staying on. Right, they just said we're upset about our conditions, but if they made a tnai saying aval ihecha de imru amru le beferish einanu osen imcha ela bekach vekach, and if they said no, we want $10 more an hour ufai sinu balabayis stam, and the balabayis kind of appeased them via faisu al das hapsak she amru lo nis, oh sorry, if faisu. Al das hapsak shamru lo nispaisu. And he appeals to the Tosefta, right? The parties are trying to sell a car. One guy said 25,000, the other guy said 12,000. They go home. Whoever comes back and says, let's go forward, he's considered to have accepted the other guy's deal. So there's no talk here of a Maisa Kenyan Yoni. All there is talk of acceptance of the offer and going weiter. Yeah, it's possible, right? I'm just saying that it seems like the Rishonim here aren't assuming that there was any formal Maisa Kenyan at the beginning or even in the renegotiated terms. That's just not necessary for the process. That's just what I want to bring out here. And so you might think, well, how's that supposed to work, right? I mean, where's the Maisa Kenyan in all this? You see that? Yeah?
Why do you think there is anything?
Because what makes this binding, what makes the fact that we spoke about these terms binding, right? Or even if we agreed on that, it's just like a verbal discussion. In halacha, there's a general presumption that, things are chatter until they're concretized by a Maisa Kenyan. It just seems to be the way halacha works.
That's right.
What do you think? Let's ask Yakir. Yakir!
Yes?
Did you hear Yoni's point?
No.
I just asked, is it true that...
Did not hear very well.
I just asked, is it true that in regular other you know, halachic agreements or things people do, like that you need a kinyan for anything, for it to be chav.
Right, so my observation here is that, look, the Gemara never talks about a kinyan, so there's no assumption that you need a ma'aseh kinyan, a standard ma'aseh kinyan. Yonah's saying, mechatesi, maybe in halacha doesn't really care about kinyanim for things to be binding. Right? So I guess we're just debating right now, is the background assumption that for something to be binding, there has to be a ma'aseh kinyan or not? Right? I'm saying yes, Yonah's saying mechatesi. You have thoughts on this? Yakir?
The question is whether for something to be binding, you generally need a ma'aseh kinyan?
Yeah. Right, that's what we're trying to figure out.
I would think no, I'm not sure that's...
I mean, you would think that you don't need a ma'aseh kinyan in general.
Right.
Why?
You're just misguiding yourself. You're just misguiding yourself by being misguiding yourself, right?
No, I think you need some sort of kinyan to misguide yourself. Right, generally you need a kinyan sudar, you need a kinyan odisa. I think generally, especially in eschaivos, the assumption is there's no eschaivos unless there's a kinyan. There's a shaila whether mechila tzrich a kinyan. But otherwise, for transactions to be binding, kinyan is the derech
hamalach. Right, so maybe if I can try sharpening what I think might be in this question, right? We know that kinyan exists in order to transfer title or rights to property, or even to non-physical kinds of property, kinyan for Eved or Isha or whatever else. But if there's a thing with a kinyan for this is not like
right.
You know, if you explain kinyan as a means of transaction, then it actually
right. What kind of transaction is there?
What's happening?
Right.
To be fair, if you think that if you go back to the very first thing that we covered, and you think that Tovah is like an advent,
sure.
Then I can force it to be a kinyan, or it should be something.
Right. But if it's less than that,
yeah. But if it's not really, it's more of like a.
I think that's a good way of framing it. Meaning, it depends on the nature of the Poel relationship. Correct?
You're willing to concede that if the Poel is not really an Eved, then there should be no need for a kinyan?
No. I don't want to concede that, but I will say that the whatever kinyan is required is like weaker than a general kinyan because the relationship is less than a transfer of an asset. So I want to reserve the right to say that this kinyan is doing less than other kinyanim are doing. Especially if you hold Lav Guf O'Connor. But otherwise, why should the terms that they just discussed, why should those be locked in? Why isn't this just like a Yoreid case, right? Whereas, what distinguishes like this guy who's just providing a service outside of a contractual agreement from someone who's providing a service within a contractual agreement with a fixed price and fixed terms?
And you're just calling the locking in mechanism, you're calling that a kinyan.
Yeah, that's what I think is a kinyan,
okay.
Right?
So, American, why you don't need like a kinyan? You just need like an agreement that consideration
right.
Of both sides.
That's right. Well, Kant, halacha seems... That's like an important difference, right? Halacha is obsessed with kinyanim. Kinyanim seem to be the mechanism of exchanges in halacha. And insofar as a contract is some sort of exchange, you would think you need a ma'aseh kinyan. Or if you think, put it differently, if a generating binding obligations to others... usually come about through kinyanim. His chayvus requires a kinyan.
I just feel like you haven't proven it. Like, you're going to prove it from, like, you know, a chas malacha kinyan for somebody who has shown it explicitly, but, like, that could just be, like, maybe that's just their rashita that has the kinyan, but maybe the other three shown don't think you need a kinyan. And the fact that there's no evidence of kinyanim in this, like, yeah, maybe you're right, we said originally, there really is no kinyan.
Right. I think if you're right, I mean, so, we'll get to our sugya in a second. I'm just saying as a general background assumption, I would say for agreements to bind the parties, for something to generate new, like, Hofeldian rights and duties, there's got to be something more than just a verbal utterance.
Yeah, I need more proof. Like, I need, like, other examples that are not explicit, like, transactional.
So hischaivos, right? Is hischaivos transactional in your view?
But that should can be hischaivos.
Hudas called the kmei and dummy. Is there a kinyan?
They call it a kinyan odisa.
Yeah,
that's like that. That's what it's called in the Rishonim, Sefer Shumos. It's a kinyan
yeah,
odisa.
Yeah, Rishonim then term it as kinyan, but I'm not sure
that's
like the only.
Okay, I mean, so I don't want to get bogged down with like what we call.
No, but I think it's important. I think that there's certainly this. I would certainly admit that like there's this strand of like thought within halakha.
But you need kinyanim for
everything. You need kinyanim for everything.
Right, if somebody's going to bind...
Sure, but I'm not sure that's...
It's like, justified.
Yeah. Or that's,
I agree with that. I agree with that. I'm okay with dropping the Kenyan talk for this sugya right now, the sugya Ayin Zayin. Maybe there's something else that makes the agreement binding. Just what's that thing? What are we going to call it? Don't call it a Kenyan, right? What's the thing that makes the agreement, makes us a binding agreement locking in terms rather than some sort of yored relationship?
Okay, I think that's a fair question.
So that's the thing that I'm after.
Okay, not I think that's a fair question in American law also. I think there's just a little bit more flimsy.
Well, it's a contract. It's the consideration, right? It's the
right.
Fact that there's...
So there,
absent a halachic theory of consideration, right, what's the thing that makes that...
So what's consideration?
That each party is getting something in exchange for the promise.
It's not like a one-way gift.
Right. I mean, it's like I'm giving you something and... In exchange for my giving you something, you're giving me something. That's what makes something a contract in secular law,
okay.
Common law. Ben?
There's a significance to the fact that in the Gemara, there's like each party has a claim. Meaning, if the agreement already is a Kenyan, then it wouldn't matter. You could just say, you would have thought that the Poland would say, you convinced us, so you pay us more. Too bad there's already a Kenyan. And why is Dafka the response of the other party had its own different Dafka?
Right, yeah.
That seems to imply that, like, we're trying to find, like, a middle ground or some form of whatever, rather than just, like, yeah, too bad you have a Kenyan.
Right. It's interesting that he says that. I think Mara says that. But I do think that the reason why you're committed to the first negotiation is because that's deemed to be binding. Right? So
why can't that just be the answer?
Because the Gemara is worried, well, how do you know this wasn't a superseding agreement? And the Gemara's answer is, because he has this excuse that it was a daita de tafis lecha v'achil v'shtia.
That would override, like...
Right, it's a new contract. And the answer is, no, it's not, because I was just agreeing to this. It's like kind of added bonus not to renegotiate the original terms.
I just think there's a possibility that it is a new contract, and the point is that this is just, you know, like when the Ripa compares it to the case of the 102 by time, it's like you're reestablishing the contract.
It's a new contract.
Right.
Right, but the Gemara is saying, absent a clear renegotiation, it's not new. It's just you're under the same terms that were originally bargained for. So I'm saying, you see, the Gemara thinks you're bound by those terms. And I'm asking, what made those binding? Just the fact that both parties said something to each other? In halacha, that's just like a kinyan dvarim. That's nothing. Right? I say, I'll do this for you, and you say, you'll do this for me. Like, there's no binding agreement there. It's just dvarim.
When did it become binding?
When did what become binding?
The agreement.
In the Schiris Polem case?
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to figure out. So Yoni wants to say, on your view, Yoni, when did it become binding?
Why would they start working?
Why? So the Rishonim are going to say, oh, Kenyan has chalas malacha.
Yes, I don't think you have to. I'm not saying.
But my point is, fine. But you can see the conceptual point that there's got to be something. There's got to be something that solemnizes or consummates the verbal discussion.
I think every type of law has to reach a point where something that
right.
makes it binding.
Fine.
America might take consideration, so
right.
law has to...
Right, so what I'm going to say, what I want to know then, is a Kenyan haschalas hamalacha, how does that relate to the world of the standard Kenyanim? Which I think you would agree to those terms,
yeah.
is just say, just I don't have to call it a Kenyan.
Okay, I think relating to your point when you talk about differentiating whether Kenyan haschalas is weaker, at what point is it no longer useful? Call it Kenyan. It's just
yeah.
like a
war. I agree. Nothing for me hinges on calling Haskalah Samalacha Kenyan as much as I'm interested in the fact that it's the Haskalah Samalacha that consummates the background negotiation, and that's what locks the parties into the terms.
Right.
Right, that's what I'm after.
Is there anything else to that? I mean, we have already seen started yet, so I feel still jumping the gun. That there's something else other than a Kabbalah that was started?
Yeah, I mean, you might think that um, like you, I thought you were suggesting earlier that you could read the sugya as assuming that there's a separate maisa kinyan that was performed.
Just, well, I was suggesting it, yeah.
Right. I think that would be the alternative route. Mm-hmm.
But nothing weaker. No way what a marriage can offline and make an agreement.
Right, I don't think so.
Two sides and appointments.
Right. Unless you want to rely on minav, like a kin situmta. Oh, if the minav is, then...
Right.
Right. So the Rivashir, so I think the Rishonim are implicitly trying to figure out, the Gemara never talks about doing a standard Maisa Kinyan. The Gemara assumes that you're locked into these rates, the agreement is binding. So where does that all come from, right? How do you distinguish from just the Dvarim Ba'alma and these binding terms? So you can see here, you see the Rivash addresses this explicitly in Simin Tafayin Hei, that's the same tshuva as the Chazanim that we saw earlier about staying on for the second year. She'ein Schiris Apoel Tzarech Shtar Velo Kinyan. This might work out well for you, right, for Yair and Yoni, right? It doesn't require a Kinyan. Elakol She'asa Apoel Melachto Chayv Asocher Lasis Lo Mishalem Scharo She'hisnu Imo. You just got to pay him the schar that you stipulated with him. See, isn't it interesting that he says Velo Kinyan? You might argue, oh, the Rivash is saying that Aschalas HaMalacha is a way of binding you without Kinyan.
He doesn't say anything about Aschalas.
Doing Malacha.
Well, that's when he finishes.
Well,
it's not really clear for the Rivash
right.
What makes you bind him any harder.
Right. So, but why should you pay the stipulated amount rather than the bargain, rather than the market rate?
That's what this would apply to the market rate.
No, he says scholarship is...
Well, you could argue that once...
Unless it's like a subjective valuation theory, like we saw...
Or if it's agreement, I mean, you could say that. You could say, like, there is an agreement. The agreement is kind of, like, up in the air until it gets consummated, so to speak, when it's completed. And once I finish it, like, it's part of the bargain. But now that one's too late when the other sides were negative on the deal.
It's like Gemar Melacha.
Yeah.
Is the, you know, what... Awesome. Right.
And then what happens in the middle is, like, oh, I'm complicated. And that might be...
Right.
Reading of the Sugya on Zion, it's like it's a big mess what happens in the middle.
Right. It's interesting. Here, what's going on here, though, which is strange, he's talking about the case where he says, if in fact, I could show you there's next Simon in the Rivash is also related to this. So you can look here in Simon Tafai and Vav. So remember the case that the Rivash is talking about? It was a case of the community had made a verbal agreement with the chazen that he's going to be exempt from taxes, and then he started working for them. So the community argued, we never did a maisa kinyan, we never wrote in the shtar that he's exempt from taxes. So who cares that there was like some background negotiation where we agreed to it? What matters is like what a maisa kinyan was performed on. And there was no maisa kinyan on the tax exemption. Okay, and the Rivash says, no, that's wrong, because once there's milacha, you're chayiv to pay, you're chayiv to abide by the terms of the agreement, the terms of the stipulation. So it's not just about compensation for the services, right? It's also the conditions that came along with it. Atzile b'nei Yisrael yoshven al medine al midyan? Amidin. Higyani k'savchem. I saw you guys are very upset what I said in my tshuva. Right, so you guys were upset that I said that the verbal agreement is binding. So how could it be binding if it's not written inside the shtar? And why? He says it's binding because she'ein zetzarech shtar velo kinyan. She'kol she'asa po malachto chayva socher lasis lo schar mishalem. Got to pay him the whole amount. And he says she'bechol eila ein tzarech kinyan. And then notice he's talking about the term of the tax exemption. She'bechol eila ein tzarech kinyan. Ela haschalas hamalacha hi hakinyan. Right here, his phrase actually tafayin above rather than tafayin hey. That haschalas hamalacha is the kinyan. It's the kinyan on the terms. Right? So the absence of the shtar doesn't attenuate the verbal agreement. To the contrary, right? It's irrelevant because the maisa kinyan that consummates the agreed upon terms is just the aschalas hamalacha. Okay? So I think the Rivash is basically making the point, look, you Balabatim, or you Dayanim, who had the Shaila about the Chazan, you think that that's just a term and you have to, only the things written in the Shaila that are binding. No. Right? What's binding is whatever terms were agreed upon that were followed by, that were consummated by a scholar's law.
Is the Shaila not binding?
It's not relevant.
Okay, but I'm saying,
we'll talk about that.
Say they were dead after the Shtar sign.
Yeah, good question. I think that's a Dian in the Rishonim, or at least in the Poskim, which we'll get to. Because you could flip. I'm asking, where's the Kinyan? Rivash says, oh, the Kinyan is Haskalas HaMelacha, Tafayin Hei, Tafayin Vav.
And then you're asking, well, what could you have a standard Kinyan in lieu of Haskalas HaMelacha?
Yeah, we'll see that at the very end of the
separation.
Yeah. Okay, so where does this idea come from? So it could just be, look, it's implicit in the Gemara's discussion that assumes that you're bound by the terms, kind of the Sugya Nayin Zayin that I was appealing to at the beginning of the Chabur today. That's one way of seeing, just assuming, that's one way of extracting the idea of Haskalas HaMelacha from the discussion of the Sugya, but there is a better Raya. What's our better Raya? So where's the discussion? Where's the real discussion of Haskalas HaMelacha as a Kinyan? Sugya Ayin Vav Mabez. Anybody want to tell us about this? Anybody here? Anybody conferencing in want to tell us about the Sugya Ayin Vav Mabez? Anybody want to tell us about the Yoni?
They haven't started working yet, but they were going to the workplace. If they've already traveled to the workplace, they've already done like some like background work, so to speak, to start working, so then you are obligated.
So basically, the first part of the Gemara is giving us gloss on Ein Lahem Zal Zel Taromes, right? We saw the Ushami's interpretation. We saw the Bavli's interpretation number one about the middleman, right, the HR guy who exceeds his powers. Bavli here is giving a third interpretation of Ein Lahem Zal Zel Taromes. And it basically says that it's a case of retraction, where one of the parties is trying to back out of the agreement. And how does it go? So the Bavli says, I'm hiring Yoni to work for me. There's just background discussions, no performance, no traveling. And then I call Yoni up, even though we spoke about it, right? We had an agreement. And I say, Yoni, I don't want you to show up. So in that case, Yoni has no grievance, no claim right for compensation against me. All he has is a legitimate taromas, just a grievance. Right? But, the Gemara says, if Yoni actually showed up to work, then, Yoni?
Then you're 5K something.
Scharan Mishalim, the Gemara says.
Yeah, Scharan Mishalim, but you know, it's not the same as like, working. It's
yeah, like, so, I gotta pay you your schar, but I get some discount for the fact that you have some sort of benefit by not having to do labor, right? Which we'll talk more about later on. So the Gemara says, if Yoni didn't show up to work, lo halchu, then, well, there's haromes, no compensation for Yoni. But if Yoni shows up to work and I say, oh, Yoni, I actually don't need to do any services for me, go home, I gotta pay out Yoni's contract. Or I gotta pay him his schar mishalim, to use the Gemara's phrase. Okay? So, why is the halchu, lo halchu, a distinction? Why should my duty to compensate Yoni turn on whether he showed up to work? Let's ask Gabe. Gabe, do you know why? I think Gabe's here. Gabriel?
His mic's off or something.
But there are two Gabes. I think this is Gabe also. Okay. He's pretending he can't hear us. Gabe, we know you could hear us.
Sorry, technical issues.
How convenient.
I feel like I was making things about being disarmed.
What's that?
These are some strong accusations.
Yeah, no. Okay, I take them back.
Can you write the question?
Yeah. So, why? What's the significance of the holchu lo holchu question?
The question is whether that the halacha captures the halacha, or why theoretically the chiyuv of Satan starts at the moment.
The latter. Why should the Baal HaBayis's chiyuv, his duty to pay tashlumin, schar mishalim, turn on whether the poel showed up or not showed up? Why should the duty to pay compensation depend on whether the poel shows up to work? All right, we gave his chance.
Are you asking outside? Are you interested in the Rishonim benefits, or are you interested in
my tell me either one. What do you think? I mean, or you can tell me what the Rishonim say.
It seems like there's a range of opinions. You can put it in the world of Nezek, you can put it in the world of contracts, so it's supposed to be putting things in the world of Nezekin.
That's right, very good. So what's the Nezek approach?
The Nezek approach is that through the deal that you made with the Paul, you believe he was depending upon, you've caused him through some kind of Darwinian mechanism, which I don't fully understand, to lose out the opportunity.
Excellent. That's exactly right. So one approach. Okay, thank you, Gabe. So one approach
is the Tosos approach, which says that the mechayiv of tashlumin at holchu is nezikin. It's a kind of garmi. Why is it garmi? Why is showing up cause damage? So Tosfos says, what?
Showing up.
Meaning if he shows up, and then you say, I have no work for you, you're chayav to pay a contract. But if he never came in the first place, you canceled before he left his house, then you don't owe him any damages.
So Tosfos says, because there's just an empirical assumption here that if the worker already traveled, and it's going to be too late for him to find alternative employment on the marketplace. Right? So, if halach, then we can assume, or then we know, that he lost an alternative employment opportunity. And you're chayav to compensate him for generating that loss, for causing that loss. That's the garmin effect.
But you don't need to go to the Nezek approach.
Well, that is the... You're saying Tosfos' approach is not Nezek approach? Or?
No, it is.
Right. Yeah, we'll get to the other approach in a second. That's Tosfos' theory. And I think one weakness of the theory is that you have to read a lot into holchu lo holchu, right? You have to assume that was just a loose proxy for capturing whether you can find alternative employment. It's not clear that the Gemara itself means that, right? Which is, who points this out? Yeah, this is one of the Ramban's criticisms of Tosfos. Okay. Let me point something else out for another issue for Tosfos. According to Tosfos, what condition has to obtain in order for the tort liability claim to be valid? Right, so not just halach, but some other empirical fact has to obtain.
Can't get other jobs.
What? That he can't get other jobs, meaning, what does that assume? What is that?
That there's demand for...
Okay, that other jobs were available to him.
That meaning was like...
Right? Meaning that, in fact, I deprived him of an opportunity that he would have taken or could have taken, but for my promise or my inducement for him to come to work.
That's like
Yeah, important Nachminos, right? Yeah. Let's say I'm the only employer in town. Right? And I say, Ben, come work for me. And you were just, if you didn't work for me, you were going to be surfing all day, right?
You're like, I have nothing else to do, so might as well.
Exactly. So then even if you show up to my house and I cancel on you,
like, it's
on Tosis' theory, I'm not chayiv, because you didn't have alternative employments that I induced you to lose, right? So for Tosos, it's crucial that al yado nisbatlu osvayom, that I caused you to lose out on an employment opportunity. Okay, very good. So there.
It's not like a crazy assumption.
What? Yeah, it's not a crazy assumption. It's just not an explicit assumption, right? The Gemara doesn't say that, but it's fine. Something that is a little dachuk, I think. Notice the Gemara's phrase, as Yoni pointed out. How much does the Gemara say you're chayav to pay in halach? No sein lahen scharan mishalim. Okay. So suppose that I promised Ben $60,000 to work. There's another employer out there who was going to offer him $30,000 if he didn't come to work for me, and he lost out on that opportunity by my promise. What's the amount that that Ben's entitled to?
$60,000.
What?
Well, the fraction of $60,000.
No, whatever the other employer should.
$30,000. Right? Your high. The nezek is for the lost, the alternative lost employment opportunity. Right, Ben?
What is
not perfect.
Wait, what's that? What's that, Gabe?
And the Gemara concluded it's not Schar Mishalem, it's Schar Batal, which might be slightly different.
So it's Schar Mishalem less the value of being able to stay home, right? How much would you pay to get an extra vacation? Right, so I agree to that. Well, and we'll talk a little bit about how you calculate Schar Batal later on. But my point is that the Gemara thinks you're getting Schar Mishalem. So which Schar Mishalem? If you buy the argument, like Tosos is saying, that the nezek is your lost employment opportunity, then the schar mishalem, I think, is referring to...
Schar mishalem is a vague term.
Well, what does it refer to, right? It literally means your full schar. But, in odom habaton labarekan...
The Rivash's language was scharo, and there we interpreted it as meaning the original...
Okay. So you think one interpretation of the Gemara is to be like the value of the promised contract, i.e. the $60,000 that the employer who reneged promised you. I think that would be the push-up shot on the Gemara. Right? On Tosus's read, you can't say that. On Tosus's read, the Nezek is the value of the lost opportunity. Right? Meaning how much the alternative employer would have paid you. That's the Nezek. You lost a $30,000 contract by relying on my inducement. Gabe, do you hear that?
Yeah, I hear that.
Okay, good. So I think the Ramban is going to disagree with all of these interpretations that Tosus is advancing.
Is there potential to correct the second assumption that there's no other jobs available and it shouldn't be garbage? Is it possible to say that there would be garmi nonetheless because, like, I was banking on making this money, and therefore, like, I might have done something because I...
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Halacha, if I did something in reliance on your promise.
Yeah, or on this job.
Right. If, like, you spent money or something.
Right, which case the garmi also could be on the amount of salary, not just, like, the other person's salary.
Well, if he had a loss, basically, like, some expenditure that he made, like, let's say he spent money to get to the workplace or something, right?
Right, or he bought a house, like, using this job.
Yeah, and arguably, it's a little complicated, but maybe you could consider that garmi, right? For the same reason that we're assuming the lost opportunity is garmi. Yeah, so it gets a little complicated in the garmi question, but in principle, yes. Ramban disagrees with all this. He first of all says that just the forced interpretation that holchu and lo holchu is a loose proxy for whether or not they could have found employment elsewhere. He says that's not so persuasive, right? Deimken lamale lefluge bein holchu lo holchu, right? So he is upset by that, and the Ramban says I have a different pshat. What's his pshat? Haschas amalacha, right? So the distinction of holchu and lo holchu is that once they start working, once they start traveling, so there's a kinyan of performance, right? through the Ramban's formulation. Holchu dafka katani. She'af al pi. Okay, we'll get to that in a second. Why? Why is this relevant? Kivan she'es tchilu b'malacha nischayev me'achshav litin lahem scharan mishalim. Kimosha kibalalav. Once there's a schalas malacha, there's a duty to pay out the contract, the promise contract. Shekishem shashar hadvarim niknin bekinyan, kach tzhiras poalim niknes ba schalas malacha. So there are two important points here. A, that there is a kinyan of a schalas malacha, and B, that a schalas malacha is qualitatively similar to the standard kinyan. Kishem shashar hadvarim niknin be'ex, this is niknin be'wach. Right, so Yoni would say the Ramban has a Kenyan fetish, right? It's everything has got to work through Kenyanim, but the Ramban's embracing that, right? He's saying, yeah, everything's got to work through Kenyanim. So the Kenyan here is the Kenyan of Salah Samuel.
And I'll push back on Yoni's behalf and just say, until I see someone use the word Kenyan and draw
fair.
To standard Kenyanim,
fair.
I'm going to assume it means a word that locks
right.
In
stuff. Hey, I'm just.
Yeah, you can read that Ramban too.
What?
Yeah, you can read the Ramban, minimize.
Kishim Shashar Advarim.
Kishim is loose.
But he does say, Kach Shiras Polem, Niknes.
Yeah, so it makes it like formalized.
Okay. Not but he does, I'm saying it's not like he doesn't use the word, the term.
Yeah, no, it's like it doesn't have to be as strong.
He just verbs. He turns it into a verb, right?
So I'm saying it doesn't have to be like on your like, Torah or
Kachat
Kinyanim, like,
Shim Hagbah and Kach. Okay. But it's up there. It's up there with the other Kinyanim, right? Gabe, you have a comment? Or?
What is the
Kinyan
according to the Ramban?
Say it again.
What's being acquired according to the Ramban?
Yeah, really interesting question. I'm going to send out a reading about this a little bit later on. But I think there are... Because you're right, it's a really interesting idea. What is the thing that's being transferred, right? And I think you have to say that the Ramban has a very abstract view that... When I enter into a contract with you, it's like I'm giving you the entitlement to the salary and the performance of the work. So it's not like a commodity that's titled to a car that's transferring or ownership of real property or ownership of metaltalin. What's transferring here is like some abstract entitlement to the value of the contract. Right, Gabe? That's what the Ramban seems to be saying. That's what you have to say. Right?
Well, you have to say that if you're assuming that a Kenyan is a transfer.
Yeah.
Then I know, remorse and freedom are good. I'm always Machmir. We talk about a Kenyan is an action that affects us all else. Very Machmir in a certain formulation. Because I think part of it was we were Kedushin. He wants to make sure Kedushin isn't seen as an acquisition.
Right.
Whatever.
Right.
So if a Kenyan is a transfer, then you're forced to find some kind of intangible thing as being transferred. If a kinyan is just a word for things that affect binding stuff, then you don't need to find a point of transfer.
Yeah, it's interesting. Except that I would say the Ramban's whole argument here is to prove that once there's the kinyan haskalas malacha, the
terms are binding.
Not just that the terms are binding. That would be consistent. That would be conciliatory with the Rav Friedman formulation. I think he wants to say that the poel now is entitled to the full amount of compensation. Right? Which to my mind sounds like the Ramban's going to say the value of the contract has been transferred to the poel. It's his contract to lose.
Like a shooter.
Kind of. Or even more than that, right? I think it's there's actually been a transfer of entitlements, and we just have to conceptualize what's this abstract thing of a contract that's of the entitlement of the contract that's been transferred. Gabe, does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does answer my question. I'm curious why we wouldn't consider the direction of the Hakdama about Kinyan and Gul for Kinyan potatoes, and is it possible there are not thinking along those lines?
Yes, I think this, the more you want to view the Kinyan here as in like a transfer of entitlements, the more you're going to lean more into the Kinyan HaGuf idea, I think. Right? It's like it's kind of like a sale, right?
But it seems like the Ramban is pushing back on the poem as this entitlement.
It could be. It could be. For our purposes, that distinction is not important yet. Whether it's both-sided or one-sided.
Well, I think it would make a difference whether or not, like, if you think it's like
Guf O'Connor. Correct.
So then I would
correct.
Find more to the lawyer.
Right, that is true. But if, for our purposes right now, we're not interested in relitigating the Groove O'Connelly question. But I think Gabe's right to point out that the more you think there's like a bona fide transfer, the more you're thinking in terms of transfer. Right? So yeah, he's transferring his body in exchange for like some transfer of the entitlement to the value of the contract payment.
Why is entitlement supposed to just exchange his body for money?
What?
He exchanges his body for money.
What if he doesn't have money at the end of the day? Right. He doesn't have to go do the work.
Well, the point is he doesn't have to do the work if the other guy blacks out.
Yeah, he just has to walk. If he takes the bus to this factory, then that he gets paid for that bus ride.
Not just for the bus ride. He gets paid the full value of his contract if the employer backs out after that. That's what Derenbaum's going to want to say here. Look at Derenbaum says, right? Derenbaum says, if the Baal HaBayis backs out, kvar nishtabed lo Baal HaBayis b'haschalas
hamelacha. Yeah,
right?
For the amount of work he did.
No, even if there's no work that's done at all.
No, but going to work is considered work.
No. So I think actually one stretch of the Ramban's is that it's a bit of a stretch to read halchu lo halchu as haskalas hamelacha. It's not obvious that taking the bus is the actual beginning of performance, right? You might say, even if we're talking about haskalas hamelacha, it's an open question whether it's doing the actual terms called for by the contract or it's like traveling to do it. Kind of a bit of a background question. So Ramban wants to say, for whatever reason, maybe either he wants to think that going there is haskalas hamelacha, so showing up to work is the beginning of work, or he thinks that maybe you actually need haskalas hamelacha in order for this kinyan to go into effect. I'm not sure they're in Baum's own position.
It would be hard to argue that showing up to work constitutes the beginning of work, right? If a Baal HaBayis hires you and you come to work and you say, well, you know, this is the first hour of my day, so I want to be paid for an hour of work. Also, I'm a poet, I'm going to quit.
Right.
You know, it's
interesting.
Hard to say that you get paid for that.
That's a fair point.
Right, about how much you travel.
But you might say, right, you might say, well, you're not entitled to be paid for it, but it's, you know, it's first part of the job is showing up.
Maybe.
Right? It's
easy to think about the haskalas hamelacha, but not as the malacha.
Yes. Right, so maybe the Ramban just wants to say it's haskalas hamelacha. Or,
right.
Or maybe he actually doesn't care about showing up, and he thinks the important thing is the work, and he's just okay stretching the Gemara's language of holchu to mean, you know, when they put the hoe into the ground.
Right.
Now,
well, they clearly didn't start working in the case, though.
Right, in that case, there wasn't any work to do.
Do you think Ramban is off when they actually started working in some ways?
Because, like, Lo Matsu Tua or something.
Yeah, they might sound like they didn't do anything.
So they went, they scouted out the land, and so it's not just getting on the bus, right?
They came,
it's like.
They step off, foot off, like, you know, off the bus.
And they see everything's swamped, right?
Yeah. What does that mean? They do anything. Using their process.
Yeah, the full value of the contract. Less the consideration for the of getting to have vacation. So, like, if I were to pay you $100,000 to work for me for the year, and I cancel after you do one day of labor, I have to pay out the whole contract. Less the amount that you would pay generally to not show up to work.
Like, how much you would give your boss?
Right? How much of the vacation they work to you?
Right.
How much would you pay to get vacation?
So maybe you'd pay $60,000 to not have to work at all, right? So then you get $40,000. But the point is that Ramban's not saying, Ramban doesn't think you pay quantum merit for the amount of work done. No. Once the Baal HaBayis backs out, so Poel has a special right to back out. It's not our sugya now. We'll talk about that separately. But the Baal HaBayis, not allowed to back out. Once there's a kinyan. Before there's a kinyan, he is, on the Ramban's view, and that's why there's just taromas before a kinyan. But after a kinyan, he's locked in, and therefore if he backs out, he already bought the eved, to use Gabe's phrase, right? Or he already transferred the value of the contract to the poel. So he's tough nuggies, he lost it already. That's the view. Okay? Look here at the Ramban's formulation.
Maybe you're missing something about Ben's question, right? But if halchu constitutes the transfer of the kinyan, right?
So if I show up and there is work to be done and I'm closed in, I would find it hard for the Ramban to say that I still get paid in the same manner.
If who's closed there?
Right, the pole is closed there.
Well, the pole is able to be closed there because he has special head there.
Right.
Then we have to figure that out.
If Hulku is already the transfer of the full terms of the Kenyan, and then what happens is, you know, my not having work to do is just like my sort of paying back the vacation, you know, my what I would pay for vacation days, then if Popo was closed there, Mahora would have the same compensation, right? I show up, now I'm closed there, but we already have this.
You think a pole who's closer he should still get the full value?
I'm saying unless being closer entails now like returning the terms of the contract.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Maybe, yeah.
It would be like unjust enrichment for him to, right? Every pole then could show up to work, get the Kenyan, and then
right.
be closer.
Right.
Wouldn't
there's
make
something
sense.
About there not being work to do.
No, I don't think that even. I think it's more just that when the Torah allows a pole to quit. Doesn't mean he could run away with
the... So the din would be the same if you showed up to work one day and the Baal Abayah says, yeah, I don't really need you today. He would pay also Skaro Mishalei minus the...
Exactly, exactly.
Okay. So it's Lav Dafka, you know, Sada Matzalecha.
Exactly.
Okay.
100%. Sada Matzalecha is just a hechetimtzi for the Ramban for why the Baal Abayah decided to be closer. Right? Okay. So, look what the Ramban says. What's the case of Ein Lahem Zel Zel Taromes? De Kivan Shelo Hischilu B'Malacha Lo Nischayvu Zel Azeh V'Lo Hifsidu Zel Zeklum. Before there's a Kinyan of Aschalas Malacha, there's just no Hischayvus, right? There's no claim rights. There are no duties. So basically saying that there's no mutual obligations. The obligations have to have been consummated by a Kinyan. Okay? But Hischilu, once there's haschalas hamalacha, v'holchu chamarim, haschalas malacha hi, v'nischayiv balabayis me'ata b'schiras hayom. Okay, balabayis becomes obligated. And then the Ramban says, he has this interesting proof, but he says, you see from the phrase of the Gemara, da'fil lo hayamotze mitchila schiras klal chayiv. You see from here that the Tosos idea of requiring a counterfactual test to see whether they could have found employment elsewhere is not relevant on the Ramban's view. Right? So on the Ramban's view, suppose I hire Ben. Ben shows up for the first day of the term. And then I back out. So suppose Ben could not have found employment elsewhere. Is he still entitled to collect the full value of the contract? According to the Ramban? Ben? Of course, because the entitlement was transferred. Right? Ben now owns the agreement. Who cares about what he could have done in a different world, whether he could have gotten employment elsewhere? The Ramban saying that the right of the poel to collect is not under Nezikin. The right to collect is under contract. It's under Kinyan, under the transfer. And that fully belongs to the poel. See that? So the Ramban says, I disagree with Tosos. For Tosos is about Garmi, and you have to see what was the value of the loss. And the Ramban says, for me, it's about the value of the gain. The house was transferred. The Poel owns the value. Right? And so the Poel gets to keep it. Okay. Yoni and then Yair.
Is this a good curve for the Ramban? But like, couldn't Tosos agree with the Ramban in the case, but not agree with the Ramban? Like, I feel like part of the Ramban's question here is like, how much, part of the Kiddush is how much work, what do you have to do that if you're a Kalkamah? So his finish is kind of like going on the bus is enough because you're a Kalkamah. But the case he brings a proof from, like the Sfina case, is a case where the person actually did have to work. Like they schlepped, they rented a ship, and the ship went halfway before the guy canceled the contract. That's what Mara said, like, oh, we have to pay the rest of it.
Yeah.
But like that case, like even Toso could agree, once he could pass the work at that point, he close might agree there is a Kenyan of a Kalkamah.
For everything.
But he might not agree with the concept that going on the bus is enough to consider a Kalkamah.
It could be, just I think that the Gemara doesn't mention Askalas Malacha, and Tosos never really appeals to it as a theory. So the impression you get is just that Tosos doesn't really hold that there.
Well, because like Mara in our case, you'd argue it's just not Kalamala. Like, you would argue that you can't
right.
constitute going on the bus.
Also, the next line in the Gemara is Lo Yitzchilamalacha, Yitzchilamalacha. Like, the Kalamala exists in
yeah.
Tosos.
But I think that next line is a different issue. That's not about a kinyan askalas malacha. That's just about like compensating him for the value
yeah.
that he. Yeah, exactly. That's a quantum merit principle.
Right, but you could still like
have different stages of.
Right.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, seriously, you're just trying to defend how would Tosos interpret
yeah,
that?
Yeah, Tosos could easily argue that he agrees in principle, just not.
Yeah, we'd have to see. We have to look at Tosos and see what he says. Like if he's saying to say that to get to explain this. But yeah, it's definitely a fair point. I just don't know offhand how Tosus reads that, so you have the Svina. I don't know if he says anything there. Good.
Can you scroll up to the top of the paragraph?
1 second. Where do you want me to go?
Yeah, well, I'm asking this phrase. Lo nit chayu zelazeh, but lo nit tzidu zeh alzeh klom. Just do you think the relationship between those two factors is?
Identical. Meaning, for the Ramban, the loss is trying to deprive you of the contract that I just transferred to you.
Well, I mean, except there isn't loss, right? Like, just depriving you of
Sorry.
A contract before you started. But I think once you started, like, I invested some effort. That is a hefsek.
Yeah. So the Ramban does say, I don't disagree with Tosos. The Ramban says, I agree that there could also be nezik in here for Garmi. Just that's not the reason why you collect once there's a kinyan. Because you always do better collecting under the kinyan.
Oh, sorry, that's not what I meant. What I meant to suggest is it's possible that causing the hefsek is the Messiah for the kinyan. Which might be a reiteration of the Ramban's theme, right? Once you started Malacha, I have invested efforts,
yeah.
which cost me,
possibly
right? I need to go to work.
Right.
And now the hefsek is the Messiah.
I don't think that's what's going on in that
no.
line. No. I think the Ramban, because the Ramban does say that both things are true. The Ramban says that I hold that you collect under a contract, but even if there's no contract, like let's say it wasn't a Skala Sambalacha yet, but my promise induced you to rely on me and cause you to lose an opportunity, I agree there would be a Nezikin for there. The Ramban just says the measure of damage is different. Right? For Nezikin, you have to see how much you would have made elsewhere. And for a kinyan, you have to see how much you would have made here. Right? Just two different conceptual bases for collecting. All right. Very so to stick a machlokas between the Ramban and Tosos. Any comments on the Ramban, Tosos, machlokas? So for Tosos doesn't mention kinyan aschalas malacha. The machayev is garmi. For the Ramban, it's under kinyan aschalas malacha. Gabe, you have a comment?
One quick question. Where do Tosos think that the contract actually takes effect?
I
guess from what point onwards can the
Gala
no longer
be there? Yeah. I think Tosos doesn't think the contract ever takes effect.
Well,
so
the
Svina
case would
push
back.
There has to be some
sort of
line for
Hazara.
Think so?
Yeah.
Because if you
think so? Maybe it's only... I mean, when is the Balabayas not able to be Chozar, you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder. If Tosos could just read all those cases of Chazara as being Nezikin questions. Meaning, if the Baal HaBayis backs out, then he's chayev for causing the Poalim to lose work that they could have made elsewhere. Is that plausible?
Yeah. That's a bit creative.
Meaning, because I think if you deny kinyan askalas hamalacha, then there's really nothing that elevates this from just discussions into binding agreements.
Tosu elsewhere we saw is a lot more
kind of
economic.
Right. Yeah, it's a good point.
Theories,
right, Gabe, this works that well for you, as Yair is pointing out, that Tosus is a lav gufo kanui guy in general.
If you assume Tosus and Kedushas,
yeah, let's just talk about it. Might be a school of thought.
Right.
And then, you know, you have to interpret all these cases of Chazara liability in terms of Nezikin. I mean, this really gets back to the Hakdama Shir, right, about the relationship between Bava Kamma and Bava Metzia, what's liability in tort and what's liability under contract. Tosfos here is really interpreting all the liability rules as Nezikin, right? So when we say that the Baal HaBayis cannot be Chozer, that means he can't be Chozer free of tort liability. And for the Ramban, it just means something else. It means, right, that he's committed and bound by the contract. Gabe, you have a follow-up?
No, that's possible. It feels surprising. Like, I want to think of it as more significant than that. But it
yeah. Think about it. I think we should look for, when we get deeper into the shitas here, we have to see if it's a defensible position. But I think that's my sense of where Tosis is holding. So. All right?
So.
Yeah, Kier?
Is when for their money you collect under the contract, do you directly collect the because of the Kinyan? Or does the Kinyan just kind of set some sort of baseline against which you, a new baseline against which you measure the Mezah? Asking only because the Ramban talks a lot about testing even when he's working within the Kinyan, when it seems like he shouldn't be.
He talks about hefsid. I think he means hefsid of the kinyan, right? I'd be depriving you of the thing that I gave you, that I transferred to you, right? So it's like if I say, Yakir, my car is yours, and I transfer the title to you, and then I kind of block you from using it by refusing to give over the keys, I'm mafsid you.
Okay, that's not actually
the basis
for
Chiyuv.
Hefsid.
You're saying Hefsid's not the basis for Chiyuv. Yeah, I think that's right. Which phrase do you want to point us to in the Ramban?
Because when he says, I knew that we have a pushback to say to Rabbi, he's just reinterpreting to see.
Yeah, but they're the Gemara, right? Well, the Gemara uses that phrase of Pseida the Baal HaBayis, meaning the Baal HaBayis incurs that loss. He's referring to the Gemara later on.
Right.
So that just means like it's the Baal HaBayis is lost to bear. So, and the Poalim don't lose anything, right? They
get right.
So, and I think
and
when he's...
The line earlier, when it's time to sell that, we'll see this out that club, we were interpreting as...
So there are two ways to interpret that line. One way is to say that because lo nischaivu, because I didn't transfer my car, so I can't be considered depriving you of anything when I don't give you the keys. Right, that's one way to read it. The other way of reading it is that the Ramban agrees to Tosos' point. The Ramban agrees that there could be hefsid liabilities in cases of no contract.
I guess I understand the second way. The first way is it seem one meaning if you're reading it the first way, then become as one side of different. But like, see, if the real basis for being mechayev here is just about this tightness, then why even?
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah, so maybe the second
seems to be backward. That seems to be not necessarily safer.
Right.
I guess I agree. With
right. It would read then on the first read, it would say something like, "I did because I didn't transfer the car to you, and therefore I haven't caused you a loss. I don't have to pay anything." Right, it's a little weird. So maybe that would point to maybe the second reading being stronger.
Yeah.
But the second reading just says that the Ramban acknowledges that you could either collect under Garmi or under the contract. Right? And for a case of Ein Lehem Zel Zel Taromes, so neither of those can be satisfied, right? So it must be the case that there's no Hischaivos and that there's no Hefsid under Garmi.
Right.
And only then will... You say in Lam Zel Zel Taromas. Okay.
Right.
Good. No, it's
I'm also still a little confused about the Ramban scroll a little bit more. Is Tamrinosa they're not quite that much. Go down a little.
I like that the screen sharing really works.
Yeah. Yeah. In this paragraph, was I not about the bias? He tries to get time and all stuff. I'm still a little bit confused what he means.
וזה יפקח בעל במקום בעל בייס, פה יכול לדבר שאינו עובד, אפילו בכלל זה יום, תאמין דמיל זה, משהו לא מאף לבעל בייס מידי, אילו עובד השתה עובד למחר. אבל פועל, הפסד פסדה דיומה. I think he's just saying that there's an empirical imbalance between the poel and the bala bias that yeah, so take that last phrase about poel ha-pasit schiras de yome uchvar nishtabed lo balabayis paschalas amlacha. So what does he mean there? So I guess I would read that as saying that because kvar nishtabed lo balabayis paschalas amlacha, he would be losing that contract that the balabayis owes him. Right? That's why the balabayis can't be choser. Whereas a poel, I guess, is not considered to have transferred something to the balabayis in the same way.
Do you think the speed means like the transference, not like his ability to work for that day, like in general, just like an abstract?
Right. He says ukvarnish, meaning the latter phrase. The first phrase is grounded in the second phrase. Poel ha-pasit schiris de-yomei, why? Because ukvar nishtabed lo balabayis paschalas ha-melacha. That's the thing that he's losing, not the alternative employment elsewhere.
Right.
Does that make sense to you, Yakir, or is that a bad read?
Well, just to clarify, so on this reading, this is a very narrow kind of message, not giving a time for the whole theory of paschalas, just giving time for the fact that you mentioned immediately early.
Exactly. For sure, yeah. I think that's for sure what the time of the mills is going on there.
Okay, so then if that's the case, so first of all, the data point inside when we were discussing it, that seems odd because we already have, meaning we have this guy with the Mara Babadai, which seems to be giving him time of the mills for that exact thing.
Of why a poel could be chozer?
Yeah.
I think he's trying to explain why does the Torah allow the poel balabayis imbalance? And it sounds like he wants to say because generally the balabayis is not losing anything, whereas the poel is. Now, why is that the case? Why is it the case that the balabayis is not losing anything? So he thinks because generally, I guess the balabayis could just have the work done later. But a poel, generally speaking, if he doesn't get paid out this contract, then he's not going to be able to make the same money elsewhere. Maybe this will help you up here. For sure, if the poel can mitigate his losses, the balabayis is not chayiv to cover them. Right, that's clear in the Gemara. So if I hire you, to come work for me, and then I cancel a day in, so I have to pay out your contract less the vacation value, but also less any money that you're able to recoup through finding alternative employment going forward. Right?
What's the mechanism for that?
Yeah. That's an interesting question, which we'll get to when we talk about contract damages. But I think that's like a theory of a duty to mitigate, meaning that you can't get a windfall from the balabayis backing out. You have a duty to try to minimize whatever losses you're going to suffer. Right?
Okay.
That's a separate question. I think that's kind of what the Ramban is getting into in this paragraph. You see that? I think so. Maybe al poel haposit tchiras tiyome. It's like an empirical assumption that, generally speaking, the poel won't be able to mitigate his losses in conjunction with the fact that he's entitled to his compensation for the day. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so.
And we could think about it a little more, but yeah, I think we have, when we're going to look separately into the exact question of how to measure damages and duty to mitigate and the poel's right to be chozer and, you know, who's considered to be at fault in certain cases for being chozer. We're going to talk about that under damages. Here we're more interested in the narrower question about the kinyan haskalas malacha, and I want to bring out how this is the fundamental machlokes between Tosfos and the Ramban. It's related to the damage question, which we'll explore separately when we do damages, obviously, because whether you think there's a kinyan is going to determine the kind of damages you're entitled to. But for our purposes, I just want to tease out really the fundamental difference here with respect to haskalas malacha. Okay?
Okay.
All right, good. I just want to point out the Shulchan Aruch seems to go with the Ramban's idea, Shulchan Aruch and Shin Lamed Gimel Beis. Shulchan Aruch says, "V'im holchu, if the poelim there's some haskalas malacha, afal pisha lo hayu motzim lahaskir atzman emesh. Even if they couldn't find employment elsewhere, notzim lahem scharam ki poel batel. They get paid. That's against Tosos' theory, right? Because if you're a Tosos person, then you only get to collect if you were deprived of counterfactually having been able to find employment elsewhere." Shulchan Aruch thinks, like, no, like the Ramban, you're entitled to be compensated regardless of whether you could have found employment elsewhere, assuming that there's a haskalas malacha. Okay? If there's no haskalas malacha, see if the Shulchan Aruch addresses this, let me see. Yeah. If there's no haskalas malacha, this is Sif Beis, then the only time you get compensation is under a theory of Garmi, which is hayu niskarim emesh, right? They had an ability to, they had an ability to be hired out yesterday, which you deprived them of. That's the Ramban's view, right? The Ramban's view is that he agrees with Tosis' theory of Garmi in cases where there's no kinyan, just that in cases of kinyan, you get paid under the contract, and then it doesn't matter whether you could have found employment elsewhere. You could see the Ramah on Shin Lamed Gimel Beis. The Ramah starting the Mordechai Melamed Shehiskir Asmo L'Shtei Shanim V'Hiskil Shana Rishona Mikri Haschala Gam L'Shana Shnia U'Adim Kol Poel. So it's an interesting idea. You see the Ramah has this idea of Haschala Samalacha also. It's an interesting question. How do you exactly quantify, how do you individuate different parts of a contract? Right? It's like a 3-year agreement, and he's saying Haschala Samalacha on the agreement, is Haschala Samalacha on the whole agreement. The Shach.
Isn't that like a
really good minute? Yeah, post-game talk about this. Yeah, I'm not so interested in that question itself, like how to individuate parts of the contract. Post-game are all over this thing. Can't mean, like, you know, if you have a 3-year separate, if the 3 years are like separate in the agreement, then like we view each year separately. So if you're paid per year, then maybe this view of the Ramah wouldn't apply.
No, but I'm saying, but beyond that, like, I'm saying just in general, like, the fact that you need this, like, finish of, like, 1 year, the full first year counts for the second, like, that seems like a much more limited than the Ramban version.
I mean, only counts.
Okay, but calling the law for the Ramban means taking the bus.
Yeah.
So you assume that, like, the same standard applies to Malawi. So Malawi teaches for the first 3 hours of the, you know, the first day. That should count enough.
Right, no, he's saying Malawi, his chil shana rishona. Not that he completed the first year, he just started the first year.
Oh, okay.
Right, right? So it's very expansive, right? Arguably, the post can say it's too expansive. Okay? Notice the Shach here in Simen Shin Lamed Gimel Yud Aleph. Why is it once that there's halicha that you're entitled to be paid, regardless of whether you could have found employment elsewhere? She'oz niskayim b'neyem aschiros, she'schiros poalim nigmar b'haschal asamaisa. And so you see the Shach reads in very explicitly this idea of Haskalas HaMalacha into the, as a kinyan into the Shulchan Aruch. Okay. Now, just want to make a few observations about the nature of this Kinyan Haskalah Samalacha and its relationship to other Kinyanim. Hiskei Choshen here points out that maybe Haskalah Samalacha is Gara Mishar Kinyanim. So maybe it's a weaker Kinyan than other Kinyanim, based off the Shach, which we'll get to in a second. Quotes the Machane Ephraim, I think it's a mistake. I think Hiskei Choshen actually messed up here. It's a wrong read of the Machane Ephraim. But he quotes the Machane Ephraim as saying that, according to the Rosh and the Tur, Haskalah Samalacha is not a Kinyan Gamur, Elami Din Knas. So, Hiskei Choshen seems to be assuming that, oh, this Kinyan is like an artificially concocted Kinyan just in order to, like, Knas parties for backing out. Gabe, I think this is kind of the view that you were getting at, right? Like, when would the binding this go into effect if it's not Haskalah Samalacha? And like he's saying, according to the Machane Ephraim, it doesn't really go into effect ever, but like Chazal artificially created Haskalah Samalacha as a way to lock in terms. Now, I just think if you read the Machane Ephraim carefully, it's not what the Machane Ephraim says. Machane Ephraim says that according to Ramban and the Chachmei Svard, Haskalah Samalacha is a Kinyan. And then he says, according to the Rosh and the Tur, you collect after Haskalah Samalacha Bitoras the Knas of Garmi. So it's not that the fact that it's a Kinyan is a Knas, it's that it's not a Kinyan, and your Gviya under Nezikin is just the Knas of Garmi. So I think he actually made a mistake here in interpreting the Machane Ephraim. It's not that Haskalah Samalacha is a Knas, it's that the so it's not that it's Eino Kinyan Gomer and it's a Kinyan Shel Knas. No, it's just it's nothing. And the right to collect is the collection under Garmi. But I think the idea, the mistaken idea, which he's reading into the Machane Ephraim is very interesting. That Mikra Din is not a Kinyan, but it has binding status for like some other reason. Knas want to deter parties from backing out or something. Maybe there's some economic reason. Okay. Yeah, so if you look at, I put the Machane Ephraim on here. If you look carefully, you'll see he doesn't say that. It's the fact that it's a Kinyan is a Knas. So, what's the Shach? I want to raise 2 points about Haskalah Samalacha being weaker than Shar Kinyanim. So the Shach in Simon Shin Lamed Gimel Sifkaton Yedalid, I think this is what the Pesach Choshen is alluding to, I'm not totally sure. The Shach quotes the Ritva as saying that, yes, generally a poel has a right to be chozer without penalty, right? Poel yochel lachzor b'chatzi hayom. That's only if he's socher atzmo ba'amira in conjunction with haskalah samalacha. Then he could be chozer b'chatzi hayom. Aval kol shen ishtabe b'kinyin, if there was like a shtar or a kinyin, you know, sudar, then l'tfuye milsa asa shelo yuchel lachzor bo. Then we could like read in that the Kinyan makes it so strong that the rule of the right of a poel to be chozer doesn't apply. So this would suggest that Haskalah Samalacha Kinyan is clearly weaker than the performance of a Shtar or Kinyan Sudar. There are 2 ways to read this Ritva, I think. One is just like a question about interpreting Das, right? Oh, the fact that they did an additional Kinyan shows they wanted the relationship to be more binding than it is by default. The other way, and that's kind of consistent with Litfuye Milsa Asa, right? You're saying they did it to make the Kinyan stronger. Or you can read it just more normatively as saying that, no. The only time a poel has a right to be chozer is if there's no really strong Kinyan relationship, because Haskalah Samalacha doesn't accomplish that. But if they created a real, genuine Kinyan relationship through Shtar, Sudar, etc., then even the poel can't be chozer. The Shach himself gets very upset by this. He says it's an objective din that upholds Yachal Ashtabo, etc. But this is the shita that Ritva quotes B'Shem Rabosa of Yoni.
Why does this prove anything about like the Kinyan when like there's Ritva's shita? Like maybe the Kinyan, like this seems to prove more about the bilaterality, like in whether or not the employer has certain rights, but doesn't apply anything necessarily on on the employee himself and whether or not he has like a Kenyan on the employee having to pay.
Right, but the point is that if the employment relationship is consummated by a Maisa Kenyan, Shtar and Sudar, standard Maisa Kenyan, then it's a stronger relationship, no one could be chozer.
Well, it's a stronger, yeah, okay, but that doesn't imply that there's, and then the significance of a different Kenyan, not Kavlacha, is that it changes the employer's, you know, zechuyot. He now has, like, more rights than
he's stronger claim rights.
Right, stronger claim rights, but it doesn't change anything necessarily for the employee. Are there other nafkaminot for the employee himself? That he gets like other windfalls or other.
Yeah, interesting
other
question.
That
I'm not sure. But
if there aren't, then I'm not sure this proves that it's like a weaker Kenyan. It's just like a pilot hobby versus like.
I would say it still does. With respect to this one din, it shows that this is the one symptom of the stronger Kenyan. I hear your objection. Your objection is mechatesi, maybe something unique to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I accept that. I don't have a good way of arbitrating between those two different reads. But I'm happy to view it as one, at least one symptom. Maybe there are others.
Right. I mean, if there were other things that actually affected the employee himself,
yeah,
that would be a really
right
interesting way of looking.
Does he get other duties, other rights, or something?
And,
yeah. We should be on the lookout for those. Let me just quote, bring a second makar to your attention that also seems to suggest that Haskalas HaMalacha would be weaker than Shar Kinyanim. In the next sugya that we're going to discuss, remember the case of the prisoner who's fleeing jail, and he says to the ferryman, "I'll give you $1 million if you help me cross the bridge." And there's Haskalas Malacha, but he says, "Okay, there's Haskalas Malacha." He helps him cross. So the Gemara says that the ferryman only gets the Schar HaRoy. All he gets is like appropriate market rate for providing the service. We just lose. No, right? All he gets is the appropriate market rate. So the Pisrei Choshen quotes this whole discussion. We'll talk about this next year, actually. But he says that there's an exception to this rule. Even in cases where generally the halacha strikes down the exaggerated bargain, right? So the ferryman's not going to get the $1 million. In pasach ima v'kanamiya do, oshet nasan lo shtar chayev liten kifisha hisne ima. Right. So if there was a Maisa Kenyan, and Yoni, maybe this is the second half. To the strength of the Maisa Kenyan. If there's a Maisa Kenyan and not just Haskalas Malacha after striking an agreement, then the stipulated terms are going to be binding, even in this case of duress of fleeing from the Beis HaAsurim. Right? Shioni, I think that kind of speaks to your point.
Right?
This would be like a second nafkamina. But just Haskalas Malacha wouldn't accomplish that. Okay, so I think that's a very important point. Let me just mention the last point I want to make in the sugya. So, guys, chiddush, we only spent one chabura on a whole sugya. We're actually going to move on after this the ferry case.
Wow.
Let me just make one other observation. So there's an interesting question here, which I think Yoni mentioned earlier. I think it was Yoni. Until now, we've been saying that Asalas Malacha is a Kenyan. Rabban said it's like other Kenyanim. I just pointed to two makoros that might suggest that other Kenyanim would be stronger than Haskalas HaMalacha, right? So I guess until now we've been assuming it's the same. Haskalas HaMalacha is just like other Kenyanim, like the Rabban view. These makoros seem to say that other Kenyanim are stronger. Could you make the counter argument and say that like other Kenyanim, not only are they not stronger, not only are they not the same, they're not effective when it comes to Sefiras Bavli. Right, so I just want to point out there's not much on it. The Pisrei Choshen explicitly thinks that they are effective, and you can see that's obviously implicit in this Ritva as well. Here, Pisrei Choshen says Schiras Poel Nikne BeKasef UVeShtar VeChem BeKinyan Sudar. So he thinks very clearly that all these Kinyanim work. They can maybe move the Kinyan earlier than Haskalas HaMalacha, etc. The Shach has an interesting observation, where he, first of all, rejects the Ritva's view that Shar Kinyanim are stronger. He says, why should they be any better than Haskalas HaMalacha? And he has one phrase here, which I think is very interesting. He says, V'gam nira dehava kinyan dvarim. Maybe doing other Kinyanim are just like a kinyan dvarim. It's like a promise to do something, right? Maybe it's like a category error to try to do
Maisa Kinyan on Schiwas Poemen. It's like not nitfas in the standard Kinyanic order for some reason. I mean, it's like a Dabar Shlomo Liolam yet, Dabar Shingo Mamish. Right? It's like an agreement to do her. And then the only kind of Kinyan that would work for it is Haskalas HaMalacha, either because it's more intimately related to the Maisa HaMalacha, or maybe to lean more into Yoni's point that this is like a sui generis kind of a Kinyan, right? That's just meant to consummate a working agreement. It's just not the, it's not a transfer of an asset. Other Kinyan are really about transfers of assets and things like that, and maybe just their employment relationship is different from that. So, although the Pesach Choshen and the Ritva are assuming that Shar Kinyanim would work, you might say if you go down this argument of the Shach, that maybe they would be Kinyan Dvarim, then maybe you're limited to Haskalas Malacha as the only real Kinyan for Sfiras Poalim. Okay? All right, so maybe I'll mention a little bit more about Kinyan Haskalas Malacha, but that's basically what I wanted to discuss, this idea of the Ramban. This idea that Haskalas HaMalacha consummates the contract, for the Ramban you'd be collecting under it. Not all Rishonim agree that there is such a thing, right? As you can see from the Tosos view, Tosos is clearly going to have it. Schiras Poalim is a non-contractual relationship, and all the liabilities arise to Nezikin. Just to point out, as some of you pointed out, as Gabe pointed out, this seems to track the general distinction of Gufo Kanoi, Lab Gufo Kanoi in some general way. Right? Is this kinyan relationship or non-kinyan relationship? And you might even ask, could you have like a weaker view than the Ramban that maybe Haskalas HaMalacha is not the same kind of kinyan as Shar Kinyanim? Right? It's something weaker than that. That's kind of what you get in those two views, the Rebbe of the Ritva, that a Shar Kinyan would be stronger maybe. I'm not so sure about that. And the idea maybe in the Pesach Choshen. But those two points are a little different because those two points just show that Haskalas HaMalacha itself is not as strong a Maisa Kinyan, but those views do seem to assume that a Maisa Kinyan would work for Sefiras Poalim in some way. Right? All right, good. So we're going to stop here and then we'll pick up with the sugya of Boreach Mibeis HaAsurim and bargaining for a contract price under these kind of strange conditions, exceptional conditions. We'll do one chabura on that, maybe two chaburas on that, and then we'll go deeper into the damages question. What's the measure of damages for breaking the agreement? Shkai.